what's your opinion? This is It's Debatable.
Welcome to the fourth episode of It's Debatable, where every week students from the Department of International Relations at the University of Malta discuss a hot topic from current affairs. I am Alex Bencini, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. Today, our topic for debate deals with the question of aid to Africa, and present in the studios to discuss with us today are Hilary Briffer and Mace Tayan. Today's guest speaker is Ms. Claudia Taylor East from SOS and Dr. Anna Kaki, who will be our academic advisor. Aid to Africa has been a contentious subject over the years. Those who agree with it point out the stark poverty and deep-rooted problems which plague the country. The situation is so dire that even a meagre amount of aid may bring about a great deal of positive change, such as the provision of treatments to limit the spread of HIV. On the other hand, the opposition complain of the corruption of African leaders, who misuse much of the aid donated to the country with the intention of keeping themselves in power. Meanwhile, the little aid which does make its way to grassroots level undermines the capabilities of the people to fend for themselves. Meanwhile, the little aid which does make its way to grassroots level undermines the capabilities of the people to fend for themselves. The two contrasting ideologies are clear. And before our two students open the debate, I would like to welcome Dr. Anna Kaki, who has lectured on development and development assistance at the University of Malta, to give us an introduction as to whether aid to Africa has accomplished what it was intended to do. Joining us through the phone is our academic contributor for today, Dr. Anna Kaki, who is a lecturer of development and development assistance at the University of Malta. Thank you for joining us today. Through your insight, has aid to Africa reached its objectives over the past number of decades?
Well, thank you. In the media, it's commonly complained that aid to Africa has failed to achieve its objectives. Africa is still the poorest continent. In some African countries, a person can only expect to live until his or her late 40s. Wars have been tearing the continent apart, and the suffering is horrendous. The consequences of AIDS have also been terrible across the continent. So it's very easy to paint that picture, the picture of AIDS to Africa being a failure and of Africa being a hopeless case. But to my mind, it is quite simplistic to do so. I won't, of course, be able to fully explain in these few minutes why I think it's simplistic, but I'll just try to throw in a few ideas. The first question I would like to ask anyone who believes that aid to Africa has failed its objectives is, which objectives? Quite a bit of the aid given to Africa has over the decades been given so as to maintain political relationships, to gain contracts for firms, to keep the balance of power in the world intact. If one takes into account such objectives, aid, together with the willingness of donor countries to intervene in other ways, politically and militarily, has actually been rather effective. And that then begs the second question. If aid has not really been for countries such as France a way of alleviating poverty and promoting development and well-being, can one really expect it to have such effect? Mm-hmm. But that's, of course, just one side of the equation. Aid to Africa by certain state donors and NGOs has been about alleviating poverty and promoting development, and that has been really the primary reason for giving. And individual projects have been quite successful and have improved the lives of those targeted. So there are successes and success stories in Africa of aid doing what it should do. However, it is true that overall aid has failed to make a dent. There are many reasons for this, and many are well known. On the side of the African recipients, there have been, in a number of instances, issues of gross corruption and mismanagement, incompetence sometimes, lack of interest and commitment in a number of cases. On the side of the donor, there have been problems of not understanding the context and not choosing appropriate projects and programs, of not consulting the Africans at the receiving end of aid, of treating them arrogantly as children or as ignorant people who have to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. One aspect which I think is often overlooked is the relatively limited funds that have at the end of the day been allocated to African countries. Often people speak of the billions and billions of dollars given in aid to Africa, but again, that is a bit simplistic and misleading. According to the most authoritative statistics in the field of development assistance, Africans each got $47 during 2009 in development aid. $47 per year and per person in aid. What can one realistically do with that? People like to think that things are very, very cheap in Africa, but computers, books, medicines, medical equipment, machinery, software, a lot of things are as expensive in Africa, if not more expensive than elsewhere. So $47 per person in 1 year can only make a small dent at the end of the day. It cannot build roads, put children in school, give mothers the chance to give birth at a clinic or with a trained midwife, etc., etc. Aid will have to be more modest in its objectives. So perhaps that is the answer that I would give to the question you asked at the outset. The first step must perhaps be to decide on the objectives of aid to Africa and then think hard about what means and resources are required to reach those objectives.
Thank you, Dr. Anna Kaki, for providing us with such a well-rounded introduction with regards to the aid in Africa. We look forward to greeting you soon again on It's Debatable. And now the start of our debate. Maize, why do you believe aid to Africa remains important and necessary?
Thank you, Alex. Well, from the most rural village to the highest level of government, Africa is a continent of untapped potential and unrealized opportunity. But the challenges are many and the problems are deeply entrenched: epidemics, poverty, and corruption. Aid to Africa, especially the sub-Saharan region, has many positive objectives. USAID, for instance, claimed that aid responds to development opportunities in Africa to improve access and delivery of life-saving health interventions, to support more accountable and democratic institutions, to stop business and foster an environment attractive to private investment, and to hinder conflict and strengthen communities.
Do you agree with this, Hillary?
Unfortunately not. The main problem with aid is that although it appears to have noble intentions, in reality, it's basically telling people what to do, and if they do not comply, the help being offered will cease. It is almost like an ironic blackmail. The West say the best practices are humanitarian, that democracy is the way forward, and we have to be transparent, and we have to do this or that. At the end of the day, if a country does not abide by such rulings, then aid will be withdrawn. Aid can be seen as robbing people of their agency and causing an extreme reliance and misbalance of relations. And in that sense, it is not accomplishing its intended goals at all.
Actually, far from being seen as a form of outside dictatorship, international community has long understood that creating stability and bringing about sustainable change in Africa serves best the moral, economic, and security interests of both sides. Malta became fully aware of this reality after joining the EU in 2004. With the increasing number of irregular immigrations arriving to Malta from its southern borders, in 2005, Malta appealed to the EU Commission to change some rules and regulations concerning immigration, to do joint patrols in Libya, and to provide financial aid, especially to sub-Saharan countries, hence creating change and providing opportunities of development in the African continent has now become an important Western security strategy to decrease the numbers of immigrants leaving to the West in a dangerous long journey which costs them all their money and not even all reach their destination alive.
So, Hillary, why do you think aid isn't working or achieving its objectives?
Well, I'd like to refer to William Easterly, who's the author of White Man's Burden. This is a book which explains how the West's efforts to aid the developing countries have done ill rather than good. So he speaks of two tragedies which we see in the world. The first is what we have been talking about and what is common knowledge, that there's a lot of unnecessary human suffering in Africa. For example, children's lives, which could be saved by a 12-cent dose of anti-malaria medication. And it's indeed a tragedy that they are dying for such a lack, and everyone feels compassion to the tragedy. The second tragedy, however, is one we hear far less about. It's that the international community has already spent well over $600 billion in aid to Africa over the past 50 years, and children are still not receiving their medication. There are still between 1 and 3 million deaths a year caused by malaria alone. It would be a great thing if aid worked, but the scandal of the generation is that money meant for the most desperate people in the world is not reaching them. Over that time period, we've seen zero rise in living standards and incomes in Africa. The balance says that money is just not reaching the poor. Sure, there are occasional successes, like with smallpox, but they're so few and happened so long ago that they're hardly relevant to discussions nowadays anymore. Citing the same thing over and over points to how few successes there have been, and the fact of the matter is that $6 billion went in, and the economy did not improve. So where did it go? To corrupt rulers. Two-thirds go to rulers who have the worst ratings worldwide on corruption, getting worse over time, and the states getting much of the aid are the ones which dissolved into warlord states, for example, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Somalia, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Even Rwanda, for example, the French were still supplying the Rwandan government committing obscenities during the genocide with aid money. Aid worsens corruption, blocks democracy, and acts as an obstacle to freeing Africans from predatory rulers. We cannot be satisfied with this record for aid, one which promises so much and accomplishes so little. It's simply unacceptable that a system with the best intentions is simply making things worse instead of better.
Unfortunately, some corruption in the world is inevitable. You mentioned that success cases are rare, yet it is impossible to deny the positive change which the continued commitment of the Western donors to the African people has helped to achieve. In 2011, South Sudan became the world's newest country as a result of democratic process determined by South Sudanese after more than two decades of civil war. In 2005, following 14 years of brutal conflict, Liberia held peaceful elections and inaugurated Africa's first female head of state. The economies of 17 countries, including Ethiopia, Mozambique, and Tanzania, are experiencing sustained growth, and due to improved technologies, policies, and capacities for trade, are becoming increasingly attractive for business and trade opportunities. Moreover, child mortality in Africa has dropped by nearly one-third over the past 20 years, and due to improvements in knowledge and preventive practices, the number of people newly infected with HIV infection is decreasing for the first time since the HIV epidemic struck the continent. Those and much more are stories of success, which the dedicated continued Western aid has helped to accomplish in the past few decades.
Thank you, Mays and Hilary. You both raised some very interesting points. But we'll have to stop here for a short break. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Miss Claudia Taylor East from SOS Malta.
Oh,
I'd now like to welcome Mr. William Grech and Mr. Dominic Calwaite from COPEN. So, starting at the basics, what is COPEN doing with regards to humanitarian assistance?
Well, COPEN is a Maltese non-governmental organization that exists for the past 12 years. We're a group of 18 members that have the common value to contribute to the eradication of global poverty and any other forms of injustices. That means that it's basically a social cause that we're working for, and that allows us to work in three fields. One of them is international development cooperation, so that is where official development assistance or humanitarian aid plays in. One is global education, where we also engage with primary, secondary schools and with the University of Malta. And the third field is migration. We're working in support of migrant women, irregular migrant women in Malta. With regards to overseas development assistance, COPEN has developed structural partnerships with Ethiopian civil society organizations in 2008. We've basically started off with research with regards to EU policies impacting on Africa, on development in Africa, with a specific focus on the Horn of Africa, and then more specifically looking into Ethiopian poverty eradication and other related policies, such as agriculture-related policies. From that, we got into touch with the biggest East African network, which is based in Addis Ababa, which is the Brussels of Africa, so to speak, which is called the Consortium of Christian Relief and Development Associations. And we asked them, how can we get in touch with community-based organizations in Ethiopia? That was when we established our partnerships with small organizations in Ethiopia that are directly in touch with the people in need there. And together with them, we have started designing projects that should help address severe poverty issues and related matters in Ethiopia.
Right. Mr. Grech, anything further to add to the issue?
Yes, in fact, I would like to give more details about the projects that we are involved in. In fact, our partners, it's the Ethiopian partners that actually implement these projects on the ground. As Dominic has already mentioned, they are in direct contact with the communities that are being assisted. And the projects vary in scope. For example, we already funded through the help of the Maltese Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a health clinic in the capital of Ethiopia. And right now, we are currently helping another two projects. One is an HIV/AIDS clinic, while the second one is a sanitation project that also feeds into the use of renewable energies through the installation of a biogas digester beneath latrines that, besides contributing alternative fuel, is also contributing to income generation activities of the community. And right now in the pipeline, we are also trying to set up, actually help set up, an early childcare center once again in Addis Ababa.
Okay. I mean, from a broad point of view, I mean, how serious is the need for aid in Africa with regards to humanitarian assistance? And do you have any cases that you could perhaps bring to the table?
Right. I think, I mean, Africa still remains the continent which has the most severe problems when it comes to extreme poverty in the world. I think the biggest mistake for us is to think of the past approaches that were taken and think in more equal terms involving civil society in Africa, because those are the ones that have the expertise. And working in a structural way together with them in partnerships, rather than imposing anything on those societies there. We can only speak of Ethiopian projects because until now we have not managed to get involved in other countries. We have also some experience through voluntary work in Kenya, but as COPEN, we're still working hard on trying to establish partnerships also in other African countries, in Northern African countries, but also in Sub-Saharan Africa. South Sudan, for example, might be an interesting field for us to work in. I think a recommendation would be to provide more genuine aid. Even if we look into the official overseas development assistance that is provided by the Maltese government, for example, which we tapped into to work in Ethiopia so far, I think a very big issue for us is the question of what aid is genuine, how much of the aid that is provided is genuine, how much of the aid is provided and channeled through civil society, which can provide a high amount of transparency. As you know, in Malta, for the last couple of years, civil society organizations that want to tap into public funding need to be registered, legally enrolled, with the Commission for Voluntary Organizations, which means that on an annual basis you have to provide your narrative reports, your activity reports, as well as financial reports, and if you're working with a certain amount, even audited accounts. Mm-hmm. That means there's a high level of transparency, which is necessary because we're speaking of public funds here. Unfortunately, we've seen in the past years that also organizations that were not enrolled and that provide less transparency have benefited from the funds, which personally I would consider a serious issue because we're speaking of taxpayers' money and every cent should be accounted for. Yeah. Plus the question of genuine aid also taps into the issue of financing detention centers in Malta. First of all, we're no friends at all of detention centers. Nobody should be detained trying to seek refuge for him or herself or the family in another country coming out of a region which most likely torn by war for the last 20 years, like Somalia, where most migrants come from. So personally, I think it's very important to increase the funds that are channeled through civil society for the sake of transparency, to open up and foster honest, equal partnerships, and to think of more genuine aid, meaning that overseas development assistance, official development assistance, should be utilized solely to address problems in countries that are called developing countries, or as we refer to them as majority world, because unfortunately it's the majority of the world that is living in far worse conditions than we do in Europe.
Right. Mr. William Gregg and Mr. Dominic Cowhite, I'd like to thank you both for your contributions bringing to the show, and we look forward to welcoming you again soon on It's Debatable. Thank you very much.
Let's return to our debate now. Nays, Hillary, you have both argued your positions on the matter, and they are clearly very different. What I'd like to ask you now is if you think a solution can be found which will satisfy both parties. Do you have any recommendations?
Well, it's clear that what we need is reform in Africa. Until reform takes place and improvements are made at grassroots level, countries will persistently remain reliant on aid. We've both agreed that sub-Saharan Africa is in deep trouble. The cruelties of its warlords and the miseries of the people displaced by war are obvious.
Exactly. Neither of us is disputing the visible and dramatic results of declining economies and the unraveling social fabric of the African states. Many of Africa's exports have long been losing purchasing power, as consumers' markets are small and stagnant. Its labor force is poor and skilled because the best educated people immigrate to those prosperous countries. All those factors, along with mounting security concerns, makes it unattractive for investors, foreign or domestic. I fear that if we stop aid entirely, then the progress we've made thus so far will be reversed.
So what do you propose?
It is true, as my colleague said, that Africa's crisis is one of government, but all public development is paid off by the donors, such as schools, health centers, roads, power, and so forth. We need to get these countries less dependent on aid through reforming trade and foreign investment, which is what has been proven to be successful in Asian countries. If they could do it, then Africa deserves a shot as well.
You mean reform trade as a different form of aid rather than halting aid entirely?
Yes, exactly. We need to stress the importance of recipient ownership of development policy and the need of demand-driven aid.
Right. So Africa could essentially draft the broad frameworks and propose projects, which must, of course, still fit with the strategies and priorities of the donors. That could improve the situation, as it would be promoting ownership, which is what Ms. Taylor East was talking about, without sacrificing accountability to donors.
Yes, that's it. This way, we will be proposing a system driven by demand and joint supervision.
We'd still need an international system to assess whether or not official development contributions are matching program country needs, and that the whole affair is objective and transparent, or corruption will continue to be an issue. But there is definitely the chance for improvement through reform trade. I'll agree with that.
Thank you, Hilary and Maze. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. On behalf of the team behind It's Debatable, I'd like to thank our academic advisor, Dr. Anna Kaki, and guest, Ms. Claudia Taylor-East. I'd also like to thank our radio technician, Mr. Carmelo Grech. I do hope you enjoyed today's program. I am Alex Bencini, and on behalf of the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Student Association, I thank you for tuning in and hope you'll join us next week. Until then, keep updated.
You have just had the pleasure of listening to another student-run episode of It's Debatable, produced by the Department of International Relations within the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta. For more information, kindly visit mrsa.org.mt. Tune in next week, same time, same frequency.